My next guest is back for his second visit. You know, he's an expert in penny stocks, and while I avoid these types of investments and recommend others do so as well, his book, Penny Stocks for Dummies, was really quite good and worth the read. So we're going to have him back, and he's on the line with me right now. But today, we're going to discuss Bitcoin, which is another speculative arena for some investors. And he has some very insightful things to say and teach us. So welcome to the show, Peter.
Thanks so much, Steve. Great to be back.
So, you know, Bitcoin was the rage about 1 year ago, and the media was fawning all over it. And now we don't really hear about it very much anymore. What's been going on?
Well, it's been dropping about 70% in value from when it hit a high last December of, you know, $1,147. It's down now right now to about $355. And there's a lot of negatives going around with it. But the main one that I've indicated is that they're going to start seeing an attrition rate.
What does that mean?
It's basically merchants who accept the coin or the payment system now change their mind and go, you know what, it's not worth it anymore. There's too much volatility. You know, there's too many thefts, etc. And, you know, when you start from zero, there's no attrition at first because people are just first signing up.
Yeah.
But we're starting to see it now. We saw the first one in a pub in Ireland about a couple weeks ago, and it's just going to be the beginning of the attrition rate actually affecting the coin.
Well, you know, if it starts at the pubs in Ireland, you know it's the beginning of the end, right? But let's talk about Bitcoin and what has transpired over this last year or so, because there have been thefts of Bitcoin online. There have been exchanges that have gone bankrupt. And, you know, I want you to take us through the rest of them. But let's face it, the digital world is fraught with hackers and those unsavory types, and they're always looking for an angle to get into our pockets. And Bitcoin is a purely digital currency. You know, how is it protected from all these evildoers?
Well, that's exactly the problem. Unlike conventional banks, there's no law enforcement body who can sort of back you up if somebody does steal your stuff. So, I mean, as you mentioned, there's been tons of thefts, like to the tunes of hundreds of millions of dollars.
Mm.
That money will never be recovered.
Yeah.
There's been the Mt. Gox exchange and a few other exchanges have actually gone bankrupt. And as you know, it's very volatile. The volatility was great when it was increasing in price because everybody looks like a genius.
Yeah.
But now as it's coming down from $1,100 down to $350, then everyone's looking like it may not be worth investing in the first place. And a lot of people are starting to back out of it.
I saw a quote from Warren Buffett where he said that Bitcoin, he says, is a mirage. And the idea that it has some huge intrinsic value is just a joke. And of course, Mark Andreessen, you know, the internet guru basically said, well, you know, you don't want to listen to old white men. But, you know, that's been said about Warren Buffett before, and he's prevailed. And it looks like that's exactly what's happening, is that this assertion that the coin itself has value like a precious metal is probably bogus.
Exactly. I mean, I would agree with Warren Buffett. You know, the analogy I give is that it's like a pile of dirt. And as long as someone else is willing to pay you more for your pile of dirt than you paid, then you look pretty good.
Yeah.
But, you know, now people are, reality sinking in, and people are going, well, what is the intrinsic value? What is this pile of dirt worth? And you know what? It's really not worth anything except what someone else will pay you for it. And therefore, what's the intrinsic value is pretty much zero.
Well, it's the emperor has no clothes idea. Also, what you're alluding to is something called the greater fool theory, where you're hoping that someone who's a greater fool than you will pay you more for what you've purchased. I think that's the same thing for your pile of dirt, you know?
Exactly.
Everybody thinks the emperor's got clothes, but really, someone finally says, you know what? There's nothing here, and then the whole thing crashes. So there's been thefts, exchanges have gone bankrupt, there's been this huge volatility, and now you've got this disruptive technology like Apple Pay, and I'm not sure where that actually fits in, except it's just another form of transference, which is a form of currency, of value from one merchant, let's say, to a consumer, right?
Exactly. I mean, this is one of the warning signs that I was talking about as far back as a year ago, where, you know, there was no competition for Bitcoin at first, like direct competition. And now you're starting to see other people adapt their strategies. And Apple Pay is an example of that.
Mm-hmm.
Where they go, okay, you know what, this is starting to catch on, then we'll do this, you know, and they'll compete with Bitcoin. And all of a sudden, you know, Bitcoin is in a situation where they're the first mover, but they've got all this competition of more reliable, well-known brands, and that's just going to put more pressure on the value of the currency.
This currency is also being taxed differently in different countries, and Russia has just banned it completely, right?
Exactly. Russia has banned it, and every different nation's got a different taxation levels and different methods of reporting the income from it. It's actually quite a headache to try and understand it. In a lot of ways, it's more complicated to use the digital currency than to use conventional currencies money or PayPal or wire transfers.
Well, the anonymity seemed to be a big draw at some point, but then I remember discussing with someone that it isn't really anonymous either because they can see what computer or whatever the terminology is where the transaction is originating, and therefore it's really not that anonymous anyway.
Exactly, and it's becoming less anonymous as governments do what governments do, which is to tax and to regulate. They need to know who's making the money and from where, and they're going to make you report that. So the anonymity of it is almost completely lost.
All right. So now you take all of these negative factors, and I guess we're building a heck of a bear case here, and I'm sure there's people on the other side that think we're crazy. But, I mean, these seem to be obvious facts. And now you're saying that there's one fact that's not even pretty obvious, and it's this so-called attrition rate. Now, when Bitcoin started, I guess they needed merchants to sign up in order to accept the coin. And what was the rate of growth originally on this, something like that?
It was pretty significant. It got up to about 65,000 businesses, according to CoinDesk, who their merchants who accept and recognize Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
That growth rate is still growing slowly, but that growth rate has slowed down. And so now when you add on the attrition rate to it, all of a sudden, you know, you're in a situation where, in my calculations, that if you don't have twice the growth rate or more of the attrition rate, then this thing could die on the vine.
Sure. Well, 65,000 merchants doesn't seem like very much. I mean, there must be hundreds and hundreds of millions of merchants out there.
Absolutely. That's exactly right. There's tens of millions in the United States, possible merchants. There's hundreds of millions more worldwide. If you look at, you know, 65,000 merchants total, you're looking at 0.1% of potential merchants or less. You know, you're going to see it on the news a lot because it's in the news, and so people think that there's all these different merchants accepting Bitcoin, but there's really not that many of them.
Yeah, that was my impression, because from time to time you'll see a report that a certain merchant is, and so you go, oh, well, this thing must be, you know, getting some traction, but I think you're telling us differently. My guest is Peter Leeds. He's back for his second visit. He is an expert in penny stocks and kind of speculative investments, and he wrote a book, Penny Stocks for Dummies, which I read and really liked. You know, he wasn't one of these, you know, kind of nutty speculators. This guy knows what he's talking about. So we've asked him back to talk about another speculative item on the agenda, which is this Bitcoin. So how much time do you give Bitcoin? What's your best guess, Peter?
I don't think that Bitcoin will ever disappear because it's sort of the poster child of digital currency. And there is value in the concept. It's just that there's all these other competitors who are, you know, Namecoin, Peercoin, Litecoin. There's tons of them. A lot of those are going to disappear in the next coming months or year. And, you know, the real competition for Bitcoin is not other digital currencies. It's actually conventional payment methods, cash and debit cards, credit cards.
Now, do these fall under the title of cryptocurrencies?
Yes, all these digital currencies are.
So is that the main generic name for this whole area?
Yeah, crypto? Absolutely.
Okay. And under that is Bitcoin, and you mentioned Namecoin and Peercoin and Litecoin. So there are other competitors, but those don't seem to get any press at all. Are there any out there that are competing and kind of guarantee anonymity or something special over Bitcoin?
There's a few that are holding their own, I would say. You know, there's Darkcoin and Litecoin. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think it's pretty obvious where I think it's all heading. And, you know, hopefully, you know, Bitcoin stays around. But just, you know, I just don't want people to think that they're going to make, you know, lots of money on this investment.
Okay, good advice. My guest is Peter Leeds, and you can find him at www.peterleeds.com. Thanks again, Peter. Great interview.
Anytime, Steve. Thank you.